Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Right, we'll move on because we're going to talk about men now for a while. Baz Ashmawi and Karen Mullen, good morning.
There
morning.
You go.
Yeah. So people might recall this experiment we did with two women recently, and we did promise we'd do it with two men. So two people, different stages of life, ask each other questions about how they navigate life and maybe learn a little bit from each other. So look, you two have a lot in common. You're both TV radio presenters. You're both dads. Now, you're at different stages, though. There's probably about 15 years between
I think that's generous, probably.
Okay.
What age are you, Carl?
34.
God, I hate you.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm
so a generation. You're a different generation.
I'm on
Baz.
The ropes of 50. I'm on the ropes of 50.
And Baz, you're older than nappy stage. No, you're in fact a grandfather now. Carl, you're up to your eyeballs and nappies, two kids under three.
I was waiting to see what word would come next there.
I know half the population is going, oh, sweet divine, they're going to talk about men and their issues. No, spare. Us, right? But men are people too, and we have our feelings and our challenges. So, Carl, your first question for Baz.
Yeah, I think, you know, our eldest Davy, he's about to turn three this month. So I'm still figuring out the whole dad thing. But I don't think I was fully mentally prepared before becoming a dad for what it would mean. And I just want to know, did you feel that too? Like, did it take you a while to figure it all out?
Baz, this is hilarious. It sounds like Carl's wondering when he's getting his life back.
I hate to be the one to tell you this on national radio, Carl. It's over. I don't think anyone's ever prepared. It's funny for me because I was in a different situation. I was already in a kind of blended family. So Tanya had four kids. We'd been together with the kids and we had a family unit there, and then two kids were brought into that family unit. So it was different because I was with a know-it-all parent. Mm-hmm. She's a very accomplished parent.
Okay.
And I suppose there's a certain newness to having a child that she was very familiar with. But as a man having a child, yeah, it can be very overwhelming. I think something does switch. You know, it's the responsibility. You know, you wake up in the morning, what'll I eat today? What'll I do today? You know, the normal, you know, and I would be...
What should Baz do today?
I'm an incredibly selfish person. If you talk to anyone in my family, I'm incredibly selfish. So all of a sudden, it's not about you anymore, you know.
Have you made that adjustment, Carl?
Yeah, I actually often talk to people about, like, the mourning of the loss of your old life. That's probably the biggest thing I've had to try and figure out. You realise, oh, it's gone. It is not coming back. I keep thinking it's coming back. It's not.
But there's a nice thing with growing older. There's a nice thing. I don't think you're the same person. You know, you're a million different people in your lifetime. And as you grow older, yeah, there's a lot of negatives, but there's a lot of positives that I really enjoy. There's a certain, and I use this very loosely, isn't it? And there's a little bit of wisdom that comes along, and, you know, things that were a big deal beforehand. That's why even your attitude to your first child compared to your second child compared to your next, it changes. You become a little bit looser as it goes along, you know.
And Baz, you have a question. It's kind of a related question for Carl then, in terms of reassessing life.
Yeah, it was just kind of like, what did you reassess about your own life, I suppose, after having kids?
I think the biggest thing I reassessed actually was my own parents, in terms of I had 31 years of my parents just being my parents. And I remember then when our first Davy was born, very quickly I had this realization of, hang on, my parents were also just two people who fell in love and they had a life before us and they gave up so much. And I had never really appreciated the fact that everything they did and how hard they worked, it all went back to us. It was just this thing of, as their child growing up, I just thought that's what parents do.
I think a lot of parents are just hanging around waiting for their children to have kids and they go, look, just wait it out. They'll understand. They'll get it.
It's a pretty good feeling. I won't lie. I won't lie. You know, you do see them struggle with one child and you think, ha, if you only knew what it was like when six were running around. But yeah, that's it's interesting as well. I think when you become... anyway, when I became a father, I think you have to do a lot of self-analyzing. So the better way you understand yourself, I would be a people pleaser. So you wonder, well, why am I like that? And everything to do with your personality comes down to what your childhood was like. And you have to be aware of that because, you know, overpraising a child can lead to, you know, certain issues.
Yeah.
You know, only celebrating big achievements, you know, leads to perfectionism. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to ask, you know, with me, I had a parent who left when I was very young. So my dad was absent. So I suppose with that kind of abandonment comes a need for attention, hence probably why I do what I do and seek validation. And there's all these intricacies.
And you get that self-awareness then that it might help you break certain generational cycles that are in the best of families.
And this is the thing you notice straight away. Like you'll hear it all the time. Oh, you're just like your dad. Or you'll see your kids do something. You think, God, that's just like me. Or just, you know, and sometimes that's great and sometimes that's something you go, oh, okay, we're going to stop that right now, here now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so being very self-aware, I think, is one of the things I reassessed about myself, you know.
So, Carl, you've another question for Baz. And this is something we don't hear men talk a lot about, in a way, around body image.
Yeah, and it's probably something that feels nearly silly to be worrying about when there's an awful lot to be worrying about, you know, as a parent or just as someone in the world right now. But it's something so that...
You're beating yourself up about your body.
Yeah, pretty
you're
much.
You're really hard on yourself.
But, you know, it is something that I've always struggled with. And it's definitely something with, you know, there's less time now for yourself or to go to the gym or whatever it might be. Or, you know, you're running on empty and you're probably not eating as well as you can do. And there's definitely... I've had struggles with body image my whole life, but particularly the last couple of years. And I just wonder how... Have you made peace with that or have you dealt with that? Have you found a happy medium? How have you gone about that?
So before we go to Baz on that, Carl, what's the nature of your struggle like? Is it quite deep in there for you, yeah?
Yeah, but it is. And it's just, well, do you know what as well? It's obviously just feeling self-conscious about, like, you know, putting on weight or not, you know, clothes not fitting as well as they'd like and being out and about and wanting to look good. But actually a lot of it now, it's even more deep-rooted because I want to be the best version of myself for my kids. And you want to... You know, I want to be healthy and I want to be there for them. And sometimes just because it's so mad, you know, you don't get to be that best version of yourself the whole time, you know?
Mm. Yeah. Have you become comfortable with
I think we're in a very unique position where you're on screen a lot. Right. And you have to look at your image and you're faced with it all the time.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it's just more a relationship with food. I'm on a constant battle. I'm never the same weight ever. Right. I go and like I'm a endomorphic, I think is what it's called. So I put on muscle and weight very easily. So but it's paying bills and losing weight seems to be the narrative of my life, right? That's kind of what it comes down to. But a lot of it is how you feel. I was saying it to someone else recently. If you were to take a snapshot of you now and forward 15 years and show it to, you know, yourself in 15 years' time, you would pay any amount of money to look the way you are right now, you know. But it's how you feel in the moment. So
You seem kind of comfortable in your skin physically.
I kind of am. Like, I think you get to that. But, like, I know, say I'm going to film another series of Fateless. I will spend the next 3 or 4 months hitting the gym a little bit harder, eating really clean. But I will, as soon as Fateless is finished, the films, I'll probably fall off the wagon a little bit. And, you know, but this is all down to your relationship with food. And this is a very important thing as a parent. No matter what you say to your kids, they will only do what you do.
Yeah.
So there's no point saying to your kids, oh, you're eating too many biscuits and sugary cereal and da-da-da. And then you sit there with a big bowl of Oreo cereal and eating tubs of ice cream. You know, that's what they learn from. They learn from... And those healthy habits for kids, I think that's something you... If that helps as a motivation for you to have a little healthier kind of lifestyle or look at your relationship with food and that kind of thing. But
I'm just going to jump in there and say... Do not discuss any of your own issues around food and your body with your children in front of them.
Absolutely.
Don't let them see you on a weighing scales. None of it, okay?
Yeah.
This is and the older they get, the more this is your own deep, dark secret, okay? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%. Like, even we had an opportunity, actually, to have my youngest, who's 11, be on screen in something. And we decided no.
Okay.
Purely for the reason I don't want her at 11 analysing her image on screen.
Is it about the public kind of being a public person as well? Is that...
There's an element of that, but to be honest with you, with me, it's nearly the fact that I know that just by eating healthy and exercising, I know I can be the best version of myself creatively and I can have more energy for my kids. So there's nearly a guilt around when you're not eating properly because you're just running on empty, that you're going, oh, well, but now I know I'm not being the best version of myself that I can be. So there's definitely an element of the public body image, but actually it's more so rooted in just me and my life at home.
Yeah, yeah. You, like Baz said it there, you're hard on yourself, are you, Karen?
I think I am. I probably don't give myself enough credit for how hard I am on myself. My psychologist has said that before.
Can I say it's hard to find this out on life?
you have to be very, very careful, and this is across the board, you have to be very, very careful what way you speak to yourself. Mm. I only realised this much later in life. Like you have to speak to yourself like you would speak to your best friend. Because when you start talking to yourself in a negative way or bad way, subconsciously you're setting those thoughts in your head, and you're pulling yourself down, and you know better than anyone, especially in what we do, like the whole world will pull you down gladly. You don't need to pull yourself down as well.
Speaking of that, we'll actually take another Carl question, so because we stumbled into this, because you have a question for Baz about the kind of dog's abuse that comes with...
Yeah, there's an element of doing what we do and abuse just comes with it, you know. And I just wonder, it's something that I've found, particularly over the last year, where you get online abuse or you get someone who's, you know, sends you a DM or whatever it might be. I've found it hard sometimes to separate that from my, you know, my life at home, where you're bringing it home. And
does it get into your head? It does.
It does sometimes. A lot of the times it doesn't. But, you know, there's then the odd time where just one of them gets at you and you're in the car and you're on the way home and you're like, just shake it off. It's fine. Don't worry about it. It's not worth giving your time to. But then you're there with the kids and you find yourself and you're just exhaling and it's got at you. And I just wonder, have you come up with any defence mechanisms to stop that coming into the house?
It's a good one. I think it's a very personal thing. Like, I don't know, if you're a people pleaser kind of personality and you want everyone to like you, that's never going to happen.
Yeah, and that is kind of...
And it doesn't matter who you are or what you do, there's always going to be people who don't like you. Mm. It was actually Nancy who said it to me years ago. She just said, listen, just be authentic, be you, because... No matter what you do, if I think Jonathan Ross said it before, 50% of the people who watch you don't hate you. You're doing great. and that's basically what it, by nature of what you do, you put yourself out into the public domain to allow people to do that. So you shouldn't be too hard on yourself. But you know yourself.
You managed to ignore it.
Now I'm a lot older than you, Carl. So I've been through the stages that you're at. So I'm at a stage now where I'm very comfortable kind of in my own skin, and it doesn't really penetrate me anymore.
Okay.
Like, my thing is, like, you're a Joe Soap, you're a person you meet on the street. Do they like what I'm doing? Do they have a nice response to it? Do they enjoy the shows I make? Because I'm an entertainer and I want people to enjoy it. And they, from my understanding, the majority of people I meet are very nice to me. The ones that don't like me haven't come up and said it to me directly in a long time. So
real life is a much better place.
Yes,
they only come up if they want to say something.
The online world is a different domain.
Yeah.
And then sometimes...
Carl, do you have to kind of engage with it? Like, do you have to see the stuff basically by the nature of, you know, putting up your videos online and everything? You can't ignore it, no?
No, and I do like to have a look at what's coming in, because I do think oftentimes as well, the ones that really hurt you are the ones that actually, there might be a bit of truth to them. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's if someone says to you, that's not funny, or you're getting lazy with this, or that's not working. They're the things where I would like to read that, because sometimes you need to be put into check in that sense. But it's just the times when it's just abuse for no reason.
Do you think that they forget that you're a human being? Yeah.
I think so. There's often times you're going, God, like, do you realise that what's going on is I'm, you know, making these videos, but I'm still going home. I'm still trying to put bread on the table for the family. I'm still paying a mortgage. I still have two kids. You know, it's oftentimes you go, are you even thinking about the fact that this is what these people who you're abusing have going on at home. They have a normal life. They're actual people. You know what I mean? I'm just trying to go about my life being a decent person. You know what I mean? I'm sorry that I've triggered you so much,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, but you see, you can't
yeah, look, people. It's, yeah, I guess you got to try and think it's their problem.
Yeah.
Baz, your next question for Carl, and it's back to kids, but it's about teaching kids.
Yeah, let me see. What is the one thing you're keen to teach your kids?
I definitely something that like my mom and dad taught us, the importance of laughing. Like laughter, I think, is a really important thing to try and teach kids, that it's like a really good thing to laugh, you know, because oftentimes like don't do this, don't do that, don't laugh, whereas it was very much celebrated in our house. You know, my dad, there's a story about when we went to see what was the one about the pig?
Babe.
We went to the cinema to see Babe, and Dad got like a fit of laughter to the point where we had to leave the cinema. Like he couldn't stop. He was gone. But, you know, he always taught us that that's a really good thing. Like if you're ever laughing, go with it. It's a really, really great thing. So that's definitely something now, you know, even with my own kids, it's just having a laugh is a really good
thing. Yeah. Baz, so you have boys and you have a very small boy, Carl. Is there a new kind of responsibility now in what we're teaching boys? Because, you know, I suppose like the history here is that we thought our generation, certainly you and me, we thought we were more enlightened than the previous generation in terms of
girls, women, attitudes,
sexism, all of that. And then now there's this whole upswell of, you know, the so-called toxic masculinity. Mm. And it does feel, I'd say, to a lot of women like it's all going backwards, and that there is an issue with young men.
Yeah, I think like I was thinking about this. Is there a difference to parenting boys to parenting girls? And then after a long time thinking about it, I think I just look at the six kids and they're all kind of individual, you know. Yeah. But with boys, there is a thing of sometimes maybe them internalizing. I think when you get to teenage years, your kids want you the least and need you the most. Do you get me? They don't want you around, but they're at a stage where you want to have conversation. You want them to be able to talk to you. But sometimes boys can just be a bit more closed off. They can, in my experience, it can be. While girls, it's the opposite. They tend to be more emotionally intelligent. And I think women in general are just better at talking. But I think the definition of masculinity has changed somewhat. So it can be kind of confusing. You're supposed to be a little bit of everything, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Carly, are you more nervous about raising a boy in this world or raising a girl?
That's one of the things that worries me about raising a boy in particular, and when they get to those teenage years and the fact that they might not talk as much. I'm scared of the fact that an algorithm can potentially shape their worldview. And, you know, we've seen it with the likes of, you know, Andrew Tate and his content being served to a lot of young men. And I think that's kind of scary that, you know, who knows what social media will be like, you know, in 10 years time. But I definitely think I would like to watch that aspect of it. And I think then in terms of raising a girl, it's probably more, I think, on me, because there's probably things that, you know, these biases that are inherent in us. There's this thing called the dream gap. I remember reading about it. And it's kind of where I think girls after the age of 5 are a lot less likely to think that they can go into an engineering job or be a CEO, and it's all down to just the bias of how they're taught by their parents, and the parents don't even realise they're doing it.
I think the definition, like I think you realise as you become a dad, is your children, whether it's your daughter or your son, their definition of what a man is will come down to you. So if you sit at home and you shout all the time, or you drink at home, or you do whatever, they will associate that with what a man does, you know. And that's a kind of big responsibility to carry around. So maybe that keeps you accountable.
Yes, it's back to what you said earlier about the food thing. It's not what you're saying; it's what you're modeling for them, and your the masculinity you model for them 100%. Is what they're going to expect from men and boys they meet out in the world. Carl, you have a question for Baz around work-life balance.
Yes, so it's just about, you know, how do you balance your work with having kids? Because I think as well, I'm sure a lot of people feel this, you know, at the end of the day, it's your work that pays for them and for their life. But at what point is there the cutoff point where, you know, even though you're trying to be the most successful version of yourself, How do you put a stop to that?
So, all right, just before we go to Baz on that, Carl, I'd say there's people listening thinking, well, what's this guy on about? He's not digging coal or whatever. Is your work a bit all-encompassing because of the nature of it? Could it take over your life?
Yeah, totally. And it's very hard to switch off from it in that, you know, creatively, I'd be the type of person who, no matter where I am, you're taking inspiration for ideas. And, you know, you could be with the kids and go, this could be a good idea. And then it's to try and stop that urge to take out your notepad and go, OK, that could be a script for this and that could work this way.
Yeah. So there's no clocking off that.
Not really. And it's also one of those things where, like, you're kind of disposable too. You know, you have to stay relevant. So there's always the worry of someone else is going to come along and take your place.
Yeah.
You know?
Baz.
Yeah, I would never turn off my creativity. So that's always on. And I think if you want success, there's always a sacrifice, right? So if you have to work really hard and spend a lot of hours doing whatever you do and earning the money you feel you need for your kids, well then, yeah, the sacrifice is the time. It's just at some stage you have to ask yourself, is the juice worth the squeeze here? Because as a parent, really what it comes down to at the end of the day isn't what you're buying them. You know, as much as you think you want to give them, like I heard someone say this and I thought it was so clever. You know, you don't give your kids the things you didn't have. You teach them the things you didn't know. And so what I do is, because I work so much and Tanya manages everything to do with our family, when I am there, I try to be very involved with them. I try to make that time with them intense and important. Yeah. But I do work too much. So that work-life balance.
But you have a wife.
I
often say about what is a female CEO missing, and they say a wife. It shouldn't be the way it is. But she does,
like, I can't tell you. And it going to that masculinity thing again that we were saying there, like, I'm very lucky. I have one or two male friends that are in similar stages of parenting as I am. And I have them to offload, and they have me to offload on. Yeah. And I feel that is an unbelievable release to have that kind of shorthand with another man, you know, that makes a big difference in kind of parenting and those points where you feel overwhelmed or you feel guilty, because you do feel guilty when you work all the time.
Yeah.
But it's that balance of, well, how do I run my family and provide for everyone? But I'm lucky I have someone else doing heavy lifting for me as well.
Yeah, so. Same.
No, Carl, your wife obviously has a very challenging job as well. She's a paediatric nurse. So
yes.
that's two of you, like, in fairly draining jobs, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. She's actually going back to work next week off maternity leave. And that is, it's funny too, because there's nearly an element of, I feel like she has a real job, you know, she takes home real stress from that job. And sometimes, you know, I nearly feel bad about being stressed about, oh, I have too many ideas that I need to get, like, you know, written down, because it is ridiculous.
Darling.
You know what I mean? Like, she's like, I do not have time for this. But yeah, I have to say, like, she's an incredible operator. She, you know, I think it's a nurse thing, but she is an amazing operator. How her capacity for, you know, running everything and making sure it's a well-oiled machine and doing her job and not breaking a sweat. I wish I was more like her.
She probably does as well, does she?
I think so.
Carl, it's funny. I think I've heard this from a lot of young guys, particularly in professions like yours, when they have children, that they go into this, like, super provider mode and they think, okay, now it's all about, like, securing the future for the children. I have to make as much money as possible, as quickly as possible. And that oftentimes it does mean that, as Baz was saying, you're missing out on the presence thing maybe instead.
That 100% happened to me. It was, what's the word I'm looking for? It's nearly like this primeval just setting that comes in. And I actually struggle with it a lot, where I've started to learn that I do need to take time to be a bit selfish for myself, because I ended up, you know, going to talk with a psychologist at the start of the year because my wife Ash kind of said to me, you're not really yourself, because I was so focused on I need to provide, that I was working so much that I just was burning out, and I was trying to be dad and I was trying to be the provider and I was never taking time
for myself.
How did
this manifest?
Anxiety. And it was, you know, and it was a low enough level of anxiety, but it was not sleeping and, you know, not being present at home and just constantly worrying about this has to get done and that has to get done. And it was a low level of anxiety, but it was starting to have quite a detrimental effect on my...
And people will be interested. How did you get past burnout? Is there any key that you'd recommend to people?
I think I'm still working on it, to be honest with you. Yeah. But it is learning that it's okay to be a little bit selfish sometimes. So taking the 40 minutes out, you know, to go to the gym or go for a walk, they were things that I'd stopped doing. So I've started to reintroduce that bit of time for myself a few times a week.
And I think what Baz said there about friends is very important. I think a lot of times in the early parenting years, men possibly more, women can get very isolated too, but men can, like, the thing that they decide they don't have time for is the friends thing. Mm. And actually it's important to keep that up, Baz.
There is a thing as well with, I was talking to a friend of mine about this, and it's ego as well, you know, like, if I'm 100% honest, there's probably some validation of your existence from being successful as a man, you know, where you seek that, and it's what's the cost of that?
Yeah.
Do you know, like, you can spend your whole life, like, whether you're in science or doing whatever, trying to get these great hefty achievements, but at the end of the day, what did you sacrifice for that? And if that comes down to time with your family, or you missed vast amounts of years, the years go so fast. Mm. This is what you don't realise. You're looking at them 1 minute. I remember saying it to Amelia, who's now 20. But like, I had a little one at the time, Mahi. And I remember saying to Amelia, it's like watching the end of a movie. You've spoiled this. Because I know she's going to turn into someone who's slamming doors and not speaking to me. You know, so those years are important. So just every now and then, you just need to think. Someone said it to me before. No one cares about your family, only you. So if you allow your work to interfere with home time, like, I take no calls after 7 o'clock. I really try, because TV, you know yourself, goes on. People give you calls at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and now you're talking to directors or whoever it is. Yeah. I try not do that.
Okay, so set some boundaries there.
You have to force
the balance. Yeah. Guys, thank you both so much for being so open there. I think it's rare enough that we hear men talking like that, and like you are putting yourselves out there a bit as well doing that. On what Baz was saying there, there's lots of nice texts saying how much people enjoyed the chat and everything from women as well. But a person says, I'm older than your two guests. I'm at the empty nest stage. I'm lamenting at how quickly they grew up, annoyed with myself for sweating the small stuff and not just enjoying them when they were small. I'm now so proud of the young adults they have become. That's smashing. And look, they're all the cliches, but they are all so true, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Baz Ashmawi and Karen Mullen, thank you both so much,
guys. Thank you.